You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and the lovely co-host of this lovely show. And joining me on the other line, talk about what is probably a depressing Pacers loss, even though I'm not as down as I should be, is Tony East, the man who has too many titles and was apparently harassed by Cavs fans after the game.
That we won't tell the story again.
No, don't tell the story. It's
fine. It was odd. And I don't think they were Cavs fans. They were LeBron's fans.
Those are the worst type of people.
But I wouldn't really care if they were just yelling at me, but when they touch me, I get mad. But anyway, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's reasonable. Yeah, you can care if all you want. Fuck that.
I would do it anyway. I would do it too. Anyway, really good game. It was really exciting the whole way through. You know, both teams, I think, ended up getting a double-digit lead at one point. But it just swung the Cavs way down the stretch.
Yeah, so let's start with, let's call the last three plays.
Yes.
So there, the last three plays.
Let's start at the end.
We'll start with LeBron's three. And we recorded about 10:30 right now. We've watched and got some word from some of the press conferences or after game questions. And apparently Thaddeus Young basically took the blame for that last play for not fouling LeBron. The Pacers had a foul to give. Thad should have immediately, the minute LeBron touches the ball, just blitz him and grab him, hug him basically, and make them repass it in again. He took blame for that. He also took blame for not closing on LeBron enough. I don't know what else is to it. You don't want LeBron going left. It's his favorite thing to do is shoot going left as well. Yeah. So a lot of things went wrong in that last play, but I almost thought for a minute we're going to see reminiscences of when LeBron beat Paul George in the 2013 playoffs and won that game. And, you know, it sucks to lose to LeBron, but at least when you lose the game, at least you lose to the best player on the planet. You're not getting beat by like Korver getting open for a three. Like that would be more painful way to lose.
When you get beat by a sick buzzer beater like that, you know, all you can really do is tip your cap, right? Like, I mean, Thad could have got a better contest up, but I think he said it right. The only thing he could have done differently is foul. And I know like with LeBron, you would have think he'd just like fling it up and get some shooting foul, but he took two dribbles. Like there was time to foul and get it off in between. So I think that was the alternative to what happened. And I think what should have really been preached during the timeout by Nate. Foul.
Jimmy said 15 times. So the minute LeBron touches that ball, you foul him, they lose a second of time. Like it just makes it that much harder to shoot. LeBron might have still made a three win the game. Who knows? You know, he maybe gets and nails another one, but you just got to foul, at least make him run it again.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. And it's like harder to get a good shot like that up when you have less time.
Yeah, exactly. LeBron had enough time to make two full dribbles and enough where Thad was afraid he was going to go to the rim, to be honest. That's how much time LeBron had. And that's if it's 1.9 or 2.1, whatever, I mean, it takes about a second. The least you know, he has to pull up and he's not going to go by you.
Exactly. And you know, like if you foul him and there's like one, whatever, under 2 seconds to go, you know, I think if it's under two, you know, the guy who catches it has to just turn and shoot. Like LeBron took two dribbles because there was 3 seconds left. But if there's less, you know, it's just catch and shoot. So you can be right on the guy and it's way different. Also, Kalen's tweeting about this now. So I think we should talk about it too. You know, if Jeff Green is the guy inbounding and he was the guy inbounding, you have to have a double on LeBron. Why are they guarding the inbounder there?
Let Jeff Green beat you. I was thinking that all night. Yeah. Let Jeff Green hit his. He hit two threes, I think. Maybe only hit one. Look it up real quick.
I have
he
the
hit,
box.
He hit one three. He was nailed one. He was two for threes. He had two shots. I was like, let Jeff Green shoot every shot. Exactly. Let Jeff Green beat you from three. If Jeff Green beats you, you deserve to lose a game. That's how it is. Exactly. Because he's like the fifth option on this team. Let him keep shooting. And I live and die. I live by that all day.
Yeah, I'm with you there too. And I think Kalen's absolutely right that, and even if like maybe Kevin Love, you keep a guy on, but I think literally any inbounder, sans Korver, you just double LeBron.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think no matter who is on there, except basically Korver, you just double team LeBron because no matter what, you know he's going to shoot. Like LeBron,
yes,
he said at the end of the game, right? Give me the ball, I'll make a play. So you know he's going to shoot. So I think even you just dare to make the pass and let that other guy beat you. I mean, Korver's the only guy you don't wish, but like everybody else, like this team is terrible. They were terrible from three, except for basically Korver.
Yes, I think that's true too. And I think another important distinction to make while we talk about this is, you know, Thad didn't put up the greatest contest, but we're not grilling the execution of the Pacers D. It's the strategy, right? Like that's a huge difference because really, once the ball was in, like Thad did a good job stopping the dribbles, but he didn't put up a great contest. But the strategy was just horrendous to leave a three like that open.
Yeah, and I don't mean, I think over that foul, he just got a foul. That's what really bothers me.
I think the foul is the bad part too.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part of this is you just have to foul. If you have a foul, you have to use it. And I know you might think you don't like, because you could see Thad Young could have closed out and fouled him.
Literally free taking time off the clock.
Yeah, and Thad Young could have easily closed out and fouled him. I mean, like he took a step back and said, as soon as the ball, he just rushed LeBron. Just rush him as soon as he gets the ball. He's not going to beat you, Thad. You're big enough where you can get an arm around him.
Exactly.
I mean, and he's not going to grab your arm and shoot. They're not going to give. They don't give that kind of ticky tack foul now for free throws. Like they're going to let you call the foul and make him repass the ball in. Like, that's really frustrating. At the end of the day, no matter what, double team or not, that's the frustrating part.
Yes, but we have to credit LeBron for making a sick shot.
Yeah, and so then let's work our way back now. So, I've watched the play again on somebody's Twitter feed. I can't remember who, of the Oladipo. It looked like it was too probably close to call goaltending
live. Too close to call live. Key distinction.
Yes. Yes. If they were reviewed, they'd maybe be able to call it or not. I don't know if it was goaltending, to be honest. But the annoying thing is you can't review a goaltending if it's not called on the floor.
Right.
So it's the stupid thing in the NFL where you can review a play if it's a turnover automatically, but it's not a turnover and it's not. And then you get like these weird in between situations where they don't review plays that should have been reviewed almost essentially. So, like you're better off calling it and then reviewing it than not calling it. So yeah, they didn't call it, so they didn't have to review it, but it should have been reviewed. But at the same time, if they should have also reviewed the out of bounds on LeBron, it was probably out on Thad. LeBron hit it on the second time around, but Thad knocked it out the first time. So you're kind of getting both ends of that your Pacers right now. You're getting the benefit of LeBron going out of bounds and the benefit, not the benefit of the Oladipo block. And at the end of the day, the three still beats them, whether Oladipo makes that shot or not.
Yeah, it was so close. And like no one was really whining about the call, like except for Vic, apparently, which I missed. But it was really close. And I didn't think it was a goaltender until I saw replays as I was watching it. It was so close. But I mean, freak play by LeBron to even get close enough for them to even call that a block. And Vic, he had a lefty layup, which isn't really his thing. And he went for that, like, I don't want to call it finesse, but like tighter, closer to the basket, dangle the guy around you.
Finish. She got left-handed. Over.
Yeah.
That worst case, that ball hits the backboard, LeBron blocks it instead of getting, you know what I mean? You get it over right. And probably even
that's
too.
What I'm thinking.
Because you have the better angle, you can arc it over his hand almost.
Exactly. And the only beef you can really have is maybe they wait like a split second longer, take a jumper so the Cavs don't get a last shot. But that was a good look, so I can't.
They got the ball with 26.9, I'm like that, so it was going to be a 3 seconds differential no matter what, basically.
Right. And it was a great ending, so it was, you know, in a situation like that, it's really hard to make a definitive statement either way. I kind of get why the rule is the way it is, just because they don't want to embarrass the refs afterwards. But it's a tough call live, and I can't really blame them when it's that close.
Yeah, and I think more importantly, that end of game, I think they finally figured out how to beat the double team. And I've been banging this drum since last game, maybe since even like game two. Sabonis is the answer to beat that double team trap on Depot. Because Sabonis, I don't want to like harp on Turner, but Turner feels like he has soft hands where he doesn't always bring the ball in tight. Sabonis is so good at the extra pass. He is a good enough jump shooter where he's a threat when he has the ball, catches the top of the key, and he can get to the rim. And he has these, what feel like strong hands where he gets the ball out of the double team and he immediately looks like he knows what he wants to do with it. Turner, you're always afraid of. And that might be the solution. And I honestly think Sabonis should start in Turner's place, because I think that's the solution to getting Vic going more, is you keep beating that double team over and over again with Sabonis. They might finally lay off Vic one time, let him go to the rim. But that's, I think, the solution to this whole thing. And I think they might have figured out, might be too late now, but I think they kind of figured out how to do it. That's the way.
I believe you that Sabonis has been better as the solution there, especially in this game. He was great. There's a reason he played 13 more minutes than Turner. And 8 of 12 shooting was huge. Did we talk about this together when we talked about how he just knows where other guys are going to be when he catches? Does that mean
he knows the 4-on-3. The 4-on-3, I don't know if there's a better pacer at the 4-on-3. Maybe Thad just as good. But Sabonis is so good. When he gets the ball, he can see the whole court, and he knows what he wants to do. If we go to the rim, make a pass out, that's the player, quick pass out, whatever. But he's not shaky, where Turner is sometimes really shaky out of that. And Turner, a lot of times, out of that double team, gets the ball, and somebody knocks it out of his hand because he doesn't have a good grip on the ball. Because the way he shoots is a little lighter. Sabonis is very, feels like a tight grip shot.
He does a power dribble a lot on the catch.
Yeah. And
so for those of you that like baseball, I'll make an analogy here. Your little league coach, probably all the way up to the majors, honestly, but I only played through, I was like 12. But, you know, your coach always says, before the ball's even hit, you got to know where you're going with it the second you get it, right? Like, if there's two outs, you got to know to throw it to first. If there's one out, you got to know if there's a double play. Like, you have to know what to do with the ball before you get it. And I think Sabonis is like that in basketball, where, you know, he assesses the situation when he rolls, and then Vic gives him the ball, and he knows exactly what he wants to do before the ball comes to him, whereas Turner tries to read and react a little more. And against the Cavs, that doesn't work.
And I also think there's a double side of this where Turner would feast on that Cavs bench the way Sabonis did, because Turner would be guarded by Nance. It means he could stay down by the rim and be the shot blocker on the bench unit. And he would just be, if he's guarded by Nance, he'd be taking him in the perimeter all day. I mean, yeah. He could.
It's weird. Nobody could guard him. Turner's playing good. It's just Sabonis finally stepping up, but he's played better. So no, I don't. So I'm going to disagree that I want Sabonis to start, because I think Turner should still start. I think what he did at the start of this game too shows that starting lineup works, but I think that Sabonis should play more than Turner again.
I mean, Sabonis should finish games, but I just think, yes. I don't think this is a knock on Turner, as it's just how well Sabonis has played right over the past
two games.
Two games. And because they're finally using him the way we've kind of thought they should be using him. And that's, it's not a knock on Turner. I just think Turner also would play so much better with the bench unit. And the Pacers need to capitalize. When LeBron's not on the court, they need to make the Cavs paid. And they kind of finally did that in the fourth quarter. But the second quarter, they didn't do that. They were up, I think, five or maybe up two, and they basically held even. They have to beat the Cavs by 10 or 15.
LeBron was out at the start of the quarter, right? Right? I want to look at this now.
I don't remember, but I know they didn't expand a lead. They maybe had a three-point lead. Like, they need to just destroy the Cavs when LeBron's not on the floor, because they don't have any other options if LeBron's not on the floor.
So they need to start on the second quarter. It was tied at 25. LeBron sat until there was 7:45 to go in the quarter, and the Cavs were winning when he came back in. So the Pacers actually lost that four-minute stretch by a point with LeBron out of
it. And they were actually up two at the end of the first quarter, so really lost them.
You're right.
They lost in the fourth. They went into the fourth quarter down 10. LeBron sat, and they cut it to either a 6 or 4 point lead at some point. I mean, I think it might have been 88-82. And they capitalized on it. Sabonis particularly capitalized on that whole moment. But they've got to capitalize on that stretch.
He started the fourth in the game, didn't he?
Who, LeBron? He might start the fourth, but he sat for like a couple minute stretch in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
He did. Whatever it was, that moment, the Pacers made a little run. I think it was 11-point lead, maybe, and they cut it to six.
Yeah, from 9:25 in the fourth to 7:30.
And what was the score at that point? It was probably like cut
it by 9:25, the Cavs were up six. When he came back in at 7:30, they were up five. So they
really, I felt like more. I thought it, watching it, I felt like they had cut it by more. Maybe they had already started cutting.
80-83 when he came in, I just had it. 80-86 when he came out.
Okay, really. I thought it felt like more, but it just felt like the cap. Maybe it's because LeBron was playing with all the bench guys too. Could be, but they need to capitalize when LeBron's off the floor, and they're not.
No, they didn't capitalize, which is the key thing. They should have done better in those minutes. I mean, that's 2 minutes where you only cut a lead from 6 to 5.
I know, but I was thinking they cut it by more because it felt like they were down 11 at one point in that quarter, and they cut it to 5. And I thought it was when LeBron went on the bench, but it might have been. LeBron
comes in and his first possession, he sets up Kyle Korver for a three, and the Cavs go up 7, and then they never look back. And
that's not true. The Pacers came back and tied that game at 95.
No, they went up. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, their offense never looked back.
But I still think Turner's better positioned to take over on that bench unit.
And a lot of people have been preaching the Kojo start thing and just keep him on Korver the whole time.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
But no, here's the thing with that. I get it because Kojo is the best guard defender probably. But he's good guarding guards who like handle the ball too. I think wasting him on Korver, who just stands in the corner some of the possessions, is silly.
No, but if you take Korver out of this game, Pacers win. If you take Korver out of this Cavs team, loses.
Korver out is huge. Like, I tweeted this, and I know there's so much anecdotal nonsense in this, but I mean, the two games Korver didn't hit a three are the two games the Pacers won. Like, it's not that simple, but it's close, you know?
Yeah, and you would start Joseph because Collison's just not been good.
Been bad again.
I think you're probably right. I think I would go with the Joseph Sabonis starting lineup personally.
That'd
I think
be also awesome. You could run before it.
You could run the Turner Stevenson pick and roll, and that would be your best offensive move, or the Collison Turner pick and roll. I mean, something like that. I mean, I think at this point, the players have enough trust in McMillan. They just need to go gutsy. You're playing against the best player in the world. Your team is better than the Cavs plus LeBron. They've lost what? I was doing the math in my head. They've lost in the past 2 years. They've lost 7 of 9 games to the Cavs by a combined 26 points. I mean, they're not better than this team, but they're just there, but they need to sort of like take advantage of the slight mismatches they have, and they just need to be gutsy. They just need to go for it.
Almost. Yes. Yeah, and they have to make some change. I mean, maybe they don't have to, but like,
I mean, the simple change could be at 10 minutes, you take out both Turner and Collison, you put it. I mean, you don't have to theoretically start Sabonis, but I just think if you get Sabonis in the lineup with Vic more, you get Vic going. And that
right.
completely changes. Because I think Vic, another problem I've had with him is he gets a steal and he's not going right to the rim. A couple times he kind of pulled, even on the 3-on-1s, he sort of pulled up, which I know you don't want him to take guys 3-on-1, but he's so fast and so quick in Marriott, like let him draw the foul, like do that, go to the rim, stop being hesitant, because then you get stuck in these half court sets where they're not getting anything going, they're taking really bad shots.
Exactly. It's really hard to say. I agree he's not really pushing in transition, but I think regarding the lineups, you know, talking about what we just said with maybe changing the starting lineup, and so like Joseph played more minutes than Collison and Sabonis played more minutes than Turner. Like even in this game, Nate knew what the better group was. So maybe
I also had to do with Turner's foul trouble.
It did. He had 5. And, I think Cooper put it well, Kalen put it well, that like maybe that's a blessing because it lets Sabonis close the
game. No, it was because Sabonis was playing great. I thought Sabonis played great in the second half. I thought he was the reason they came back.
He's making me look stupid for not defending him in the last.
And it's not a knock on Turner. It's just that Sabonis has more awareness in this type of situation. And so I don't, especially this is a series where I think they were going to win. Play Turner. Fine. Let him get the minute, the experience. But Sabonis has some awareness and they can win this series. I think they're going to win game 6 because they're going to go home. And I think the Cavs are going to beat him at home to win this series. I think they'll have to win in 7. And the Pacers could win in Cleveland in game 7 if they just don't have like these dumb stretches, what it seems like they keep having. And I think it all ties to Sabonis, really. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, because he was so bad for 3 games. I get why they're hesitant to give him big minutes. But if he should. What?
They should do it. Go gut. Just have some guts.
I know. Well, if he's shooting 8 of 12 and he's the leading scorer 2 games in a row, I think you have to give him more run.
I mean, just be gutsy. I mean, like, nobody's going to blame you if you make a gutsy call and lose, because you're probably going to lose anyways. But if you make a gutsy call and win, you go down as like a legend.
Exactly.
If he makes that change and wins the series, it's going to be like the biggest thing to happen. I mean, there'll be article after article. McMillan makes great lineup change and Pacers win, whatever. And it's thanks to this. And he'll be talked about, I mean, for the rest of until they lose their next series. I mean, that's the kind of thing it could do.
Yeah, it definitely could. And he made some iffy calls in this game. So I think he needs to do something.
Yeah. You want to talk about the third quarter stretch too for a little bit, or do we kind of hit enough on that?
My gosh, the third quarter was bad. The Pacers won every quarter except the third, where they got smoked.
For the past 2 or 3 games, they've come out and killed the third quarter, which is kind of shocking. Yeah, they came out and looked really bad.
This series is weird like that, you know? 32-17 in the third in favor of Cleveland. Some of it was on LeBron just being the best. What do you have, like the first 11 points, I think, for the Cavs or something like that? Couldn't miss.
Probably. He had 44 of the 98 points.
Big credit to LeBron, by the way. First of all, 44 points on 24 shots is insane. Like, freaking nuts.
Yeah, you also want to know why the Pacers lost this game?
Free throws?
Well, yeah, the Cavs, they shot the same amount of free throws.
26-27 from the Cavs for the line, and they made LeBron, 5.
I don't know what LeBron's free throw percentage is, but it's in the 70s, right? His free throw percentage.
15 is crazy.
But what was his season number? I'm going to look it up real quick.
Yeah, in the 70s. I don't know exactly what it is.
Like, he's like not like –
He made 23 of his last 24. That's insane.
So he was 75% free throw shooter. If he shoots 75% on free throws, the Pacers win this game.
They tie. It's 12 of 15.
12 of 15 is that's 80%, isn't it?
12 of 15 is – yeah, you're right. Dang, nice. Nice, I'm wrong there.
Jesus, for a guy who's an accountant on the side,
not an accountant anymore. Former accountant.
Whatever math stuff you do on the side, now it's like the third time I've been right on a math thing.
Dude, 3/4 of 15 is a hard problem when you're an idiot like me. But
it's all right. Remember when I called something 3/9 or 6/9? It's all right.
That was the funniest part of the year for me.
It's been a long. Remember that happened probably almost a year ago, 8 months ago. I have the beginning of the season maybe.
What was it like? Someone is 5/9 or something. The player.
Something ridiculous like that. People who just joined this pod.
Yeah, only the biggest fans of the pod know what that
was. Exactly. go back. I'm sure it's from an episode in probably October range to the end of the season.
That was really funny. I don't remember what that was.
I think it's in the title of one of the pods, actually. So, but as we digress, we should get back. Yes, the free throws. If LeBron shoots his season average on free throws, the Pacers win this game. That's how simple it is.
I agree with your math there. Yeah.
It's crazy to think about. I mean,
I know.
LeBron, I say this before the series. I said it to myself about this podcast was, if you're going to lose a series, you losing to LeBron, it sucks and it keeps happening, but like you're losing to the best. At least you're not getting beat by like the Raptors, a team that like is sub mediocre and it's kind of good, but not like great. Like getting beat by LeBron, at least it's like you took the best to the brink and they, and you lost them. Like it's a dignified way to lose, put that way. It sucks. It always sucks, but it's a dignified way to lose.
I don't think losing to the Raptors is not dignifying. But anyway.
No, but it's not the same.
You lose to LeBron. Not the same as LeBron. I'm agreeing with you there.
Because I mean, LeBron is dragging this team in this series. I mean,
you know, the finals every year since 2011. Like, it's...
No, but and this team, this series, I mean, he is just dragging them. I mean, he is putting, like, this game particularly, I mean, it was like he went every time to the rim instead of shooting jumpers because he knew he had a higher percentage shot, whatever it was. I mean, he was just dragging them. That was ridiculous. It's
crazy he was only a plus two.
Well, they only won by that's all I needed to be.
I know. He was nuts. Just nuts. Highest plus minus in the game. Drum roll, please. Jose
Calderon. And I texted you before that game that I liked Calderon to start. I mean, he's fine. He's a good 3-point shooter, so he's actually pretty
when he hits 2 of 5, that's all they want him to do.
Yeah. And you knew the Cavs would shot like I think like 1 of 8 from 3 in the first quarter. They knew they were gonna hit their threes at some point. Like I mean, they only ended like 30%, but you knew they weren't gonna shoot 1 of 8 the entire game.
Yeah, J.R. Smith being bad was like that's what kept the Pacers in it to me.
I think Sabonis kept them in it. Sabonis
went off. I mean, like on the other end of the floor.
And Thad Young finally being not bricking easy layups helped too.
Yes, yeah, he was really good. He was really good.
But they actually finally found a way to close the game. I mean, I think if you take one encouraging thing out of this, that they found a lineup to close with. They found it. It's what they got to do because that was the problem in game four where they just couldn't close it. And they really, game three, they almost failed to close it too. I mean, they took a huge lead and kind of almost lost it. I mean, that's how simple it was. I mean, it's they're that close.
Yeah, you're going to do game six preview tomorrow, right? But I really hope you talk about Garden Corver, even though we've done it every pod for every game.
Yeah, or I'm probably going to spend 10 minutes talking about how they should start Sabonis. Why? I think I'm going to write about tomorrow
morning. I don't know if you listened to my preview of this game, but I talked about how important the big man rotation would be in this game.
I'm sure you did. I did not listen to the podcast this time because, I don't know, you posted this morning.
Just admit, we can both admit we don't listen to each other's episodes every time.
Not every time. I listened to a lot of your shows this year.
Yeah, but I thought that was going to be key, and I think Nate actually handled that part well, but I thought he handled the guard rotation less well.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
not I badly, should, less well.
Yeah, I don't. The thing is I want them to make changes, but I know Nate won't because he's not that kind of gutsy of a coach. To be honest,
yeah,
he's almost like the Dusty Baker of basketball, where like. He doesn't know how to adjust in the playoffs enough to win. He'll get you 50 wins every. I mean, he's done it with the Sonics. He's done it with Portland. He almost did it here. I mean, he'll get you the playoffs every year, and your team will look pretty good, and they'll have good runs. But when it comes to the playoffs, he just won't make the right move, and they'll lose. And he'll be in these tight series where they'll have a shot, and they'll be on the edge, and he won't make the really gutsy move that could get criticized, but also could get basically like applauded by everybody if it works. And he's too cautious, but maybe he'll learn. Maybe he's learning. You know, obviously this is probably his best year considering the talent he had. He's probably ever coached.
Nate McMillan punts on 4th and inches.
Yeah, he's Tony Dungy in that way. Another analogy for you can tell I'm a Colts and a Reds fan out here. Reds fans listen to this podcast. I'm sure there are some know what I'm talking about. Dusty Baker, they know it. The Reds were great for 3 years. They could have won a World Series one of those years, and they didn't have Dusty Baker as their manager. Mm-hmm. To be honest. They were good enough, but I digress again. What else are we talking about?
I don't have much else from this game.
I'm trying to think about anything else.
15 is bad. That's my end.
Vic has just been bad. I almost
No. That's an overstatement because he's been good on D still, and he had 12 rebounds, but he has not shot well at all.
He is not going to the effing rim. He's not.
He's not.
Going in like, I would say he gets double teamed, stuff like that. He can't, but. When they're not dumb, when he gets in transition, he pulls up and they're, you know, the big thing in the series, like I watched the TNT broadcast was like 100 times. I kept saying, Pacers haven't scored 100 points this series. That's been a big thing. It's like, it's not because they haven't had the ability. It's because they're not pushing the ball the way they want to. They get stuck in these really like weak half court sets, basically because the Cavs are on this whole perimeter thing. So they can get back on defense really quickly.
Yeah.
But the Pacers just attack that because the Cavs don't, not that they have like these great defenders back. It's like Jose Calderon, Kyle Korver, and Kevin Love back there. Like, attack those three guys. They're going to odds are they're going to foul you. Like they're, or you're going to get by them. Like they're not like, they're not like they're dropping LeBron back every time. LeBron's going to the rim. If you get LeBron on the rim and get a rebound off his one of his shots at the rim, you should immediately be at the other rim before he gets back. I mean, that's yes. what they should be doing, and they're not. And I think Nate probably sees that and will tell them they need to push more, because I think you watch the game on film. You'll see a lot of times where Depot had a 2-on-3, but against like three really bad defenders and could have gone to the rim and got fouled or done something with it instead of just sort of pulling back and letting Collison or Joseph on an offensive set and it leads to some really crappy shot.
I'd have to look more too, but, you know, I think – that maybe his missing is affecting how he like thinks about offense.
Well, he just needs to just go to the lane and stop shooting jump shots, to be honest. Cause that's, it'll come, you know, he'll take a few, but he's so worried about trying to hit that three that he's just doing what he does best. I mean, that's what he was doing when he was struggling midseason. The best part was he was just getting to the rim a ton. Still, he was constantly going at the rim, getting layups, getting fouled. And he was, even when he was struggling from three, he was still getting 20 points a game that way. And that's what he's got to do. Yeah. I think that the one great game kind of gave him another a confidence boost from the three, and he hasn't been good since. I don't even want to look at his numbers, to be honest, the last four games, because I'm sure it's like four made threes in four games on like 35 attempts.
It's not good.
I'm going to look it up if you want to respond to that. Okay, he's taken 31 attempts and made seven of them. So 7 of 31. Which is like less than 25% almost.
It is.
Probably around 25%.
It's not good. It's not good.
No, it's not. And so I don't know. If you have anything else, you know, anything else you want to say for them? I mean, do you think they win game 6?
I sure do, actually.
So do I. You think it's the come home and win a game kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll make it, push it to 7 for sure. Who knows what happens in a game 7 too, but I think they do win game 6.
Yeah, anything can happen in game 7, right? That's the whole point of getting to a game 7.
Yeah, it'll be awesome.
Well, like Tony previewed earlier, I'll be back with a game preview on Friday. I'm probably going to write something for Any Cornrows that might post tomorrow if I can get my writing juices flowing. I really want to write about starting Sabonis, but we'll see if anybody else writes about it too. I'll look around 8.9 seconds in Any Cornrows and stuff, but I think it's time to start Sabonis and maybe even start Corey Joseph.
I do too.
All right, well, that's all we got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at FreedmanAdam5, Tony at TEastMBA, our show at Locked On Pacers. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Come on, listen at this point in the show. It means you love the show, so leave us great reviews. Come on, do that. As always, you can send us your comments on the games, our podcasts, whatever, on Twitter, and we'll usually respond to them. We're pretty good about one of us or both of us will. That's it for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.